And you're welcome back to Windsor, where preparations are at a very advanced stage. The band is going by our window there. They're going to go down to greet the royal carriage in which President Higgins will be accompanied by the Queen just in the next hour or so. But right now, we're going back to central London. Nearly 3 years ago, as we know, Queen Elizabeth became the first British monarch in over 100 years to visit the Republic of Ireland. This marked a new chapter in the evolving and complex relationship between two neighbouring countries. Today, President Higgins, as we know, is making history when he becomes the first Irish head of state to make a state visit to the United Kingdom. My guest, my next guest, is a professor of Irish history at Oxford and an Irishman, and he joins us this morning to discuss how we seem to be reaching a stabilisation of relations after a century of tumult, and also to talk about what the future may hold for relations between Ireland and Britain. Roy Foster, a Professor of Irish History at Oxford, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Sean.
Now, how significant in an overall sense do you see today's and this week's state visit by President Higgins?
It's a significant formalisation, I think, of the realisation that the countries are separate but equal, to coin a phrase, and very closely allied but from mutual positions of independence. I think the reason why it's taken so long, as we all thought when Queen Elizabeth finally visited nearly 3 years ago, might seem initially surprising, but I think you've got to remember the odd and uncertain way that Ireland left the Commonwealth and Empire, stayed in the Commonwealth for what, nearly 20 years, very restively, then declared itself a republic, but it never seemed to be completely accepted from the British side until, I think, in more recent years, when this kind of formal but intensely friendly visit symbolises the kind of relations we now enjoy.
And it's a longish visit as these things go, 4 days, and she spent a similar length of time in Ireland just 3 years ago. But going back to the start of the last century, Roy, there was a much longer visit to Dublin by Queen Victoria, a woman who reigned for a very long time. Her statue is over the road from us here. She was in Dublin for how long?
I can't remember the exact number of days, but it was her very last visit abroad, so to speak, or off the island of England. But for her, it was coming to a central and precious part of her dominions, as it was, of course, when King Edward also visited.
Yes, she was royal there visits for nearly a month, I think it was. And there weren't too many objectors in the early part of the century, but was it with the exception of Maud Gonne?
Vast crowds turned out, in fact, to greet her. There are wonderful photographs of it. But, of course, the extremist nationalists like Maud Gonne held their alternative demonstrations, as they had done for the Jubilee in 1897. Actually, Mary Kenny and others have written very interestingly about the relationship between the Irish people and the monarchy. And just listening to the earlier part of the programme, I was much reminded of that, a sort of sneaking interest that persisted even after independence.
And Roy, do you think it was significant that the first state visit came from Britain? In other words, the Queen came to Ireland rather than the visit being arranged the other way around just 3 years ago?
Yes, I think that's immensely significant and created, I think, a great sense of goodwill, as did the Queen's intensely diplomatic conduct when she was in Ireland, where she clearly didn't put a foot wrong and took some surprising steps as well. But I think that also conduced to this feeling I've described as separate but equal. I mean, there had, of course, been unofficial visits between the president and previous presidents and the Queen. If you remember, there were famous photographs of Mrs. McAleese taking tea at the palace and Mary Robinson made a visit. But these were not official visits. They were, I think, though, very important, so to speak, icebreakers.
I know, but as Olivia said earlier, Roy, and she's not in the studio just now, but that didn't happen until the 1990s. And previously, the Irish president was more or less kept as a kind of a prisoner at home. I imagine young people looking at their TVs or whatever way they access the news on pads and in handheld devices and looking at pictures and reading reports of this to be saying, look, what's all the big deal about? Why did it have to take so long?
Well, exactly. But those same young people, Sean, wouldn't remember the very delicate and resentful state of relations apropos Northern Ireland between Britain and Ireland, when on the one side the British were saying it was as English as Finchley or British as Finchley, and on the other side, the Irish were saying, no, it's actually part of a 32-county republic that doesn't yet exist, but somehow does. And the breaking down of those mutual unrealities into the achievement of the kind of joint British-Irish approach to the North, which evolves from the 1980s, made, I think, an immense difference in the diplomatic relations between the two countries.
Yes, I suppose it would be easy to forget that it was as recently as, I think, the premiership of Ted Heath that he told a man, I know you admire Jack Lynch, effectively that Northern Ireland was none of his business.
Exactly. It's very hard, I think, for younger, more perhaps relaxed people to remember just how difficult these situations were. Also, one must remember that what was at issue when the treaty was bashed out and passed by a tiny margin, 1921 to 22, the issue was allegiance to the Crown. I mean, it wasn't the status of Northern Ireland, strangely. It wasn't the retention of British bases in Ireland. All these things were agreed. What couldn't be agreed was this electric issue of allegiance to the Crown. It was that sensitive, and that's what a civil war was fought over. So I think we have to bear that long history in mind when we're looking at why it took so long for the day that's in it to dawn now.
And again, going back just the 3 years to the Queen's visit, particularly to the Garden of Remembrance, and her speech indeed at the state banquet seemed for many people in Ireland to be the twin highlights of the trip, and maybe a sign of how far relations had improved in a relatively short time.
Yes, I think her implicit but clear declaration of regret at what at some of what Britain had done in Ireland was an extraordinary moment. And the fact that it came not from a politician, I mean, politicians can go on apologising for deeds of their predecessors as long as they like and people won't take much notice, but that it came from the symbolic head of state was pretty extraordinary, and I found very moving.
Now, you yourself, I think, were among the couple of hundred people who attended the recent reception in honour of Irish people in Buckingham Palace. Did you get to meet the Queen and speak to her?
I did get to meet the Queen, and I spoke to her about her paintings, which are so extraordinary and are all around. But she seemed more interested in talking to Sebastian Barry. She's a woman, after all. But she was very friendly and very, very forthcoming, and seemed to be having a very good time. But that's, again, she's, I think, a very accomplished diplomat. But it seemed to be genuine.
Looking at the programme of events planned for not just today, and I suppose today is the biggest day because it's the one in which she is most engaged, but there's also, of course, I think it's Thursday's reception with a Northern Ireland theme. What, to you, are the moments that we should be looking most closely at?
I think it's very interesting that there is a Northern Ireland theme. I think it's very interesting that Mr. McGuinness is invited, though he's not, so to speak, representing the Republic in any way, but he's invited as because of his role in Northern Ireland and what it has become. I think that that is highly significant and very deliberate. I think the state banquet itself, I haven't seen the guest list, so I don't know who else will be there. But I think that will also send a number of messages.
Okay, Roy Foster, thank you very much indeed for joining us from Portland Place, and our thanks to our colleagues and friends in the BBC for making that possible.